content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Well, hello there, and welcome to Heard Any Good Books Lately? A new program from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. This program is brought to you by the Friends of the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. That's an organization of citizens, volunteers, and patrons all interested in supporting the library and the services it provides. I'm George Douglas, and this program is all about books, with special emphasis on those available from the North Carolina Library for the Blind. Now, every single book we mention may not be available at all times, but most of them will be. The library has more than 86,000 titles in its collection. Books and magazines are available in large print, Braille, and talking books as well, both digital and cassette. Although one footnote here, there are some changes coming to the cassette library, and I'll be reading an article with information about that a little bit later in the program. The library has more than 11,000 patrons across the state. If you are not a patron but are interested in becoming one, I'll have more information at the end of this program, and all of the lending of the books is absolutely free, so I think you'll be interested in hearing about that. On today's program, we'll review the top five books of the year 2012 in both the fiction and the nonfiction categories. We'll be using the list compiled by the year-end edition of The Week magazine. I'll have profiles of several books selected by the readers group at the North Carolina Library for the Blind as good books to consider for 2013. Now, this will be a mix of new and older books as well. I'm going to read an article from the library newsletter, which talks about the descriptive video service, movies on DVD that are available from the North Carolina Library for the Blind. I'll also read that article I mentioned about the future of the Books on Cassette program. Now, let's begin with a look at the top books of 2012 as selected by critics and described in the January 4th, 2013 edition of The Week magazine. Now, we're going to begin with the fiction category. The number one book for 2012 is entitled Bring Up the Bodies by Hilary Mantel. In Hilary Mantel's hands, Thomas Cromwell has become one of literature's most compelling characters, said Radhika Jones in Time magazine. Henry VIII's chief advisor was both loyal and scheming, generous and cruel, traits Mantel brought to the fore in 2009's Wolf Hall, the first installment of her Cromwell trilogy. In the second one, she deepens her portrait of the master puppeteer. Mantel's exhilarating prose, unrivaled in contemporary fiction, puts us whisper close to Cromwell as he maneuvers Anne Boleyn toward the executioner's block, while inescapably sowing the seeds of his own eventual demise. Mantel obviously understands that what gives fiction its vitality is not the accurate detail, but the animate one, says James Wood in The New Yorker. Quite a few readers would be prepared to yawn at an encounter between Cromwell and theologian Thomas Cranmer, but Mantel makes such scenes alive, silvery, and rapid with insight. A caveat, this book feels too much like a bridge to the next installment, a highly entertaining throat clearing, said William Georgiades in Slate.com. So that number one book is Bring Up the Bodies by Hilary Mantel. The second book in the fiction category here in 2012 is Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk, and it's by Ben Fountain. The Iraq War era has found its catch-22, said Jeff Turrentine in The Washington Post. Ben Fountain's masterful gut punch of a debut novel unfolds on a recent Thanksgiving Day as the surviving members of a combat unit fresh from battlefield heroics, celebrated endlessly by Fox News, are feted during the megawatt halftime show of the holiday's Dallas Cowboys game. With hardly a false note, Fountain records the spectacle through the 19-year-old eyes of Billy Lynn, who's just hours away from redeployment and trying to hold his emotions in check as he soldiers his way into the belly of the beast of American excess. Fountain's novel left me breathless, said Jonathan Evason in NPR.org. This brilliant satire is also remarkably visceral. From the sodium glare of the stadium lights to the acid sting of bitterness in the throat, you feel the story with your whole body. A caveat here to this book, Billy Lynn is 95% the most entertaining novel I've read in ages, said Adam Langer in the San Francisco Chronicle, but the ending feels forced. And that was Billy Lynn's long halftime walk. That was book number 2 for 2012. The number 3 book in the fiction category is called N.W. by Zadie Smith. When in doubt, return to your roots, said Thomas Kahn in TheMillions.com. Zadie Smith's fourth novel circles back to Willesden, the northwest London neighborhood of her youth and the setting of her stunning 2000 debut, White Teeth. But N.W. is a more poetic and abstract novel, with stream-of-consciousness sections that owe a debt to Virginia Woolf's Mrs. Dalloway. Leah and Natalie, the dual protagonists, grew up together in a neighborhood housing project, and both have made it out. But each friend is struggling amid the claims that race, class, and gender make on her to find and embrace a comfortable identity. This is a deeply ambitious novel, said David Ulan in the Los Angeles Times, but it's also exuberant, lush with language, and intensely readable, intensely human. It signals the maturation of a writer already wise beyond her years. A caveat to this one, the people in this book are more stereotypes than individuals, more ham-handed cartoons than emotionally detailed human beings, said Maliko Kalatani in the New York Times. And that book is N.W. by author Zadie Smith. The number 4 book in 2012, according to the Week magazine, is Gone Girl, very popular, by Gillian Flynn. A great crime novel is an unstable thing, entertainment and literature suspended in some undetermined solution, said Laura Miller in Salon.com. Gillian Flynn's ingenious pitch-black third novel mixes the ingredients to perfection. Nick and Amy lead charmed lives in New York City until a turn of the economy demotes them to a McMansion in the Missouri town where Nick grew up. Then Amy disappears, leaving a trace of blood, and all signs point to Nick. From then on, readers ache to solve two mysteries, what happened to Amy and what happened to Nick and Amy. Neither puzzle is easily solved, said Janet Maslin in the New York Times. Both Nick and Amy are extremely adept liars, and they lie to each other a lot. They lie to you, too, Nick in the present tense and Amy in diary entries. All along, Flynn displays ice-pick-sharp control with characters so well imagined they're hard to part with, even if, as in Amy's case, they are already departed. And the caveat for this book is Flynn's characters are slightly cartoonish, and more than once, they're over-the-top scheming strains credulity, said Amy Gutman in the Chicago Tribune. That was Gone Girl by Gillian Flynn. And the fifth and final book in the fiction category for 2012 is called Building Stories by Chris Ware. This remarkable work of fiction is less a book than a keepsake box full of things you don't want to forget, said Melissa Mayers in Entertainment Weekly. Each board game-sized box contains 14 odd-shaped bits of beautifully illustrated literature, from a flip book to a poster, to an ersatz children's reader. The whole package is the work of graphic novelist Chris Ware, and there's no right way in. Picking things up at random, you find your way into an affecting story about the lonely lives of 4 inhabitants of 1 Chicago brownstone. My initial irritation at having to piece Ware's story together gave way to enchantment, said Steve Almond in The New Republic. A Poet of Solitude, Ware has used the comic book format as a tool of psychological investigation, conveying the scope of his characters' private torments and unfulfilled lives in a few well-wrought panels. Building stories might be too bleak for some readers, but it's brutal in the way all great art is. In fact, it's one of the most important pieces of art I have ever experienced. The caveat here is you can't read building stories on a Kindle, said Douglas Woke in the New York Times. And we'll go from the best fiction of 2012 over to the best nonfiction of 2012. And this one begins with the number one book, Behind the Beautiful Flowers by Catherine Boo. Catherine Boo is one of those rare, deep-digging journalists who can make truth surpass fiction, said Janet Maslin in the New York Times. In 2007, Boo embedded herself in Anawadi, a swampy half-acre slum hidden behind a concrete wall near Mumbai's airport. For 3.5 years, she recorded the human drama. Much of her book centers on Abdul, a teenage garbage collector, who in a horrific twist becomes a pawn in India's corrupt and graft-ridden criminal justice system when a crazed neighbor sets herself on fire and frames him as the culprit. Comparison to Dickens is not unwarranted. In exquisitely accomplished prose, Boo renders Anawadi and its residents' futile strivings without condescension and with heartbreaking completeness. This is not poverty porn, said 30 Omegar in the Boston Globe. Boo has written an astoundingly honest, non-exploitative piece of journalism that gives a powerful and insightful look at how the world's poor live, die, and hope in the age of globalization. A caveat, Boo's attention to Anawadi's minutest details occasionally blinds her to India's bigger picture, said Patrick French in Bloomberg Businessweek. Behind the Beautiful Flowers by Catherine Boo. The number two book in the nonfiction category is Wild by Cheryl Strayed. Brave seems like the right word to sum up Cheryl Strayed and her book, said Milena Watrous in the San Francisco Chronicle. Strayed was in her mid-20s in 1995 when, reeling from a recent divorce and still haunted by the death of her mother, she set off to find herself by solo hiking 1,100 miles on the Pacific Crest Trail. Strayed's remarkable memoir about that crucial life passage teems with honest self-discovery, all hard won. The younger Strayed we get to know goes 8 days without seeing another soul. She loses her boots over a cliff. Crucially, she grieves fully for her mother and stares down her demons. Imagine Eat, Pray, Love, written by a working-class woman who kicked a heroin addiction, said Melanie Riak in Slate.com. A caveat to this one, Strayed is sometimes too self-pitying, said Scott Parker in the Minneapolis Star-Tribune. And that was Wild by Cheryl Strayed. The number three book for the year, The Passage of Power by Robert A. Caro. The fourth volume of Robert Caro's epic biography of Lyndon Baines Johnson ranks as the best installment yet in this acclaimed series, said Wendy Smith in the Los Angeles Times. Caro has been researching and writing his project 10 times longer than Johnson's tenure as president. And this time out, he zeroed in on a period that seems to have included LBJ's deepest low and greatest accomplishment, the years between his failed 1960 presidential bid and the strong-arming he performed to secure passage of the landmark 1964 Civil Rights Act. The introduction of the Kennedy clan in this volume elevates Caro's tale to the level of Shakespearean drama, said Dan DeLuca in the Philadelphia Inquirer. Wracked by insecurities, Johnson wastes his 3 years as vice president brooding, but he rises to the occasion after John F. Kennedy's assassination. The shooting and the days after are vividly brought to life, and Johnson's bitter rivalry with Robert Kennedy becomes palpable in these pages. A caveat about this one, Caro is not exactly partial to verbal economy, said David Greenberg in the Washington Post. The next item, item number four, is Iron Curtain by Anne Applebaum. How soon we forget the speed with which Stalin's Soviet Union imprisoned half the European continent, said Jennifer Siegel in the Wall Street Journal. Anne Applebaum's epic but intimate history of life behind the Iron Curtain in the first decade after World War II offers a lesson in how quickly totalitarianism can triumph. Drawing on fresh interviews and newly opened state records, Applebaum shows how the USSR used a combination of deception, intimidation, and perks to easily co-opt local leaders and whole populations into supporting the emerging police state. A caveat about this, Iron Curtain focuses only on Poland, East Germany, and Hungary, leaving many Eastern Bloc nations untouched, said Keith Lowe in the Telegraph in the United Kingdom. And the fifth item in the nonfiction category for 2012 was Far From the Tree by Andrew Solomon. Andrew Solomon's monumental new work is a bold and unambiguous call to redefine how we view difference, said Carmela Ciariu in USA Today. The New Yorker staff writer interviewed more than 300 families to explore what happens when parents bring children into the world who are radically unlike them, whether owing to Down syndrome, dwarfism, or sexual orientation. The result is a stunning work of scholarship and compassion. Solomon captures up close the ways that parents who are raising abnormal children suffer, but also the ways that they are enriched by the experience. Across rough terrain, Solomon proves a calm and likable guide, said Julie Meyerson in the New York Times. He's produced a passionate and affecting work that will shake up your preconceptions and leave you in a better place. No one who reads all 700 pages could fail to emerge from the experience as a more imaginative and understanding parent or human being. And the caveat to this one is, Solomon is a lumper, said Catherine Schultz in New York Magazine. He far too readily equates the challenges of living with a minor differentiating trait with the challenges of living with a serious physical or mental disability. Again, that book was called Far From the Tree by Andrew Solomon. That was number five on the nonfiction list for 2012. Now, before we get to the picks from the readers group at the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, I'd like to read to you a notice here, an announcement that recently came out from the regional librarian, Carl Keene. It's called An End of an Era. With the announcement that cassette service is to be discontinued by the end of 2015, the National Library Service is ending a service which started back in 1976. Over the next 3 years, libraries have been asked to reduce their collection of books on cassette so that by the end of 2015, the cassette collection will be eliminated. Well, what will this mean for you, the reader? Well, as our cassette collection gets smaller, you may need to wait to obtain a specific title on cassette. We'll have fewer copies of each title available to loan out. You can still request or reserve titles that you're interested in, though. If you have a digital talking book machine, you can take advantage of a rapidly growing collection of digital materials. If you have not yet obtained a digital talking book machine, please contact the North Carolina Library for the Blind at 1-888-388-2460, and we'll be happy to send you a player. Magazines will also be changing from cassette to digital cartridge format. We've been contacting each of our readers without digital talking book machines that subscribe to magazines on cassettes, and we're letting you know that magazines will only be available in digital cartridge format and that you will need a digital talking book machine to play them. If we have not contacted you yet, please give us a call and we'll be happy to set you up with the digital service. An End of an Era by Carl Keene, the regional librarian of the North Carolina Library for the Blind. Now, here's another article I'd like to share with you from the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, and this is one about the Descriptive Video Service. Our Descriptive Video Service, sometimes referred to as DVS, is made possible by the State Library of North Carolina and the Friends of the Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. DVS movies have a voice describing actions, characteristics, and dress of the actors, as well as the details of the scenery or setting. Now, this descriptive voice speaks during the time when there is no dialogue, so these videos and movie discs can be enjoyed by everyone, both sighted and visually impaired. Our videos and movie discs play in ordinary VCR, DVD players, and televisions. The library does not loan or repair video equipment, by the way. Currently, we have over 500 videos in our collection, including older and contemporary titles, as well as children's titles. Now, you must be an active library patron to join the DVS Club. There's a one-time membership fee of $20. However, if you lose or damage a movie, you'll need to join again by paying another $20. But all the movies go through the mail, free matter for the blind, so individuals may borrow one movie at a time. Institutions may borrow up to three. And the loan period is 3 weeks, so you'll have plenty of time to watch the movie. If you'd like more information about the descriptive video service, it is definitely a good one. You can call toll-free anytime at 1-888-388-2460. That's 1-888-388-2460. And now let's talk for a few minutes about staff picks for some good books to consider for 2013. These were selected by the staff at the North Carolina Library for the Blind, and they are available in various formats for today. Or they're available in various formats today, I should say. The first book we're going to talk about today is Team of Rivals, which is all about Abraham Lincoln. Now, more books about Abraham Lincoln line the shelves of libraries than about any other American. Can there be anything new to say about our 16th president? Surprisingly, the answer is yes. Having previously offered fresh insights into Lyndon Johnson, the Kennedys, and Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt, Doris Kearns Goodwin has written an elegant, incisive study of Lincoln and leading members of his cabinet that will appeal to experts as well as to those whose knowledge of Lincoln is an amalgam of high school history and popular mythology. And that is the number one book recommended for your consideration by the staff at the North Carolina Library for the Blind. Also, The Team of Rivals, which is the full title of it, is The Team of Rivals, The Political Genius of Abraham Lincoln by Doris Kearns Goodwin. And this book, as you may know, is the basis for the wonderful movie called Lincoln that just premiered in December. The next book recommended for your consideration by the readers at the North Carolina Library for the Blind is entitled The Terror by Dan Simmons. The men on board HMS Terror have every expectation of triumph. As part of the 1845 Franklin Expedition, the first steam-powered vessels ever to search for the legendary Northwest Passage, they are as scientifically supported an enterprise as has ever been set forth. As they enter a second summer in the Arctic Circle without a thaw, though, they are stranded in a nightmarish landscape of encroaching ice and darkness. Endlessly cold with diminishing rations, 126 men fight to survive with poisonous food, a dwindling supply of coal, and ships buckling in the grip of crushing ice. But their real enemy is far more terrifying. There is something out there in the frigid darkness, an unseen predator stalking their ship, a monstrous terror constantly clawing to get in. That is called The Terror by Dan Simmons. The next recommended book is an old favorite, Little Women by Louisa May Alcott. A vivid, energetic account of the life of Louisa May Alcott, the first complete biography of the beloved author whose work has delighted millions of readers over the years. Louisa May Alcott portrays a writer as worthy of interest in her own right as her most famous character, Joe March, and addresses all aspects of Alcott's life. The effect of her father's self-indulgent utopian schemes, her family's chronic economic difficulties and frequent uprootings, her experience as a nurse in the Civil War. the loss of her health and frequent recourse to opiates in search of relief from migraines, insomnia, and symptomatic pain. A great story, Little Women by Louisa May Alcott, recommended by the Readers Group at the North Carolina Library for the Blind. Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell by Susanna Clark. That's the next book that's recommended for your consideration. English magicians were once the wonder of the known world, with fairy servants at their beck and call. They could command winds, mountains, and woods. But by the early 1800s, they have long since lost the ability to perform magic. They can only write long, dull papers about it, while fairy servants are nothing but a fading memory. But at Hertfew Abbey, in Yorkshire, the rich, reclusive Mr. Norrell has assembled a wonderful library of lost and forgotten books from England's magical past and regained some of the powers of England's magicians. He goes to London and raises a beautiful young woman from the dead. Soon he is lending his help to the government in the war against Napoleon Bonaparte, creating ghostly fleets of rain ships to confuse and alarm the French. Sophisticated, witty, and ingeniously convincing, Susanna Clark's magisterial novel weaves magic into a flawlessly detailed vision of historical England. She has created a world so thoroughly enchanting that 800 pages leaves readers longing for more. Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell by Susanna Clark. And the final book we'll recommend on this first edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately is called At Home, A Short History of Private Life by Bill Bryson. Houses aren't refuges from history. They are where history ends up. Bill Bryson and his family live in a Victorian parsonage in a part of England where nothing of any great significance has happened since the Romans decamped. Yet one day he began to consider how very little he knew about the ordinary things of life as he found it in that comfortable home. To remedy this, he formed the idea of journeying about his house from room to write a history of the world without leaving home. The bathroom provides the occasion for a history of hygiene, the bedroom, sex, death, and sleep, the kitchen, nutrition, and the spice trade, and so on and so forth, as Bryson shows how each has figured in the evolution of private life. Bill Bryson has one of the liveliest, most inquisitive minds on the planet, and he is a master at turning the seemingly isolated or mundane fact into an occasion for the most diverting exposition imaginable. His wit and sheer prose fluency make At Home one of the most entertaining books ever written about private life. And that's about all the time we have for this month's edition, our first edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately. I'm George Douglas. I hope you enjoyed it. If you would like more information about how to become a patron of the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, simply Google or search North Carolina Library for the Blind or call toll-free 1-888-388-2460. This program has been sponsored by the Friends of the North Carolina Library for the Blind. The program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is available right after the broadcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. So long until our next edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately?